What I'm talking about does not give you license to go buy in a grocery store. Does not give you license to go shopping and buy clothes. We're not talking about. We're talking about the one thing of eating a meal because you travel. If you don't travel, there's no need to eat a meal. Now, some people in conscience, they don't even want to do that. And if a person does not want to do that, and in conscience before God, they feel that they cannot do it, that's perfectly fine that they should not. Because God does not want anything done that is not of faith, and he doesn't want you to have your conscience, have a guilty conscience over something that may be allowable. See? Now, in the New Testament, we also had this, didn't we? We had where the church members went into a pagan temple restaurant and ate food that was sacrificed to an idol. Now, that's a greater problem than what we're talking about here, and presented a great problem for many of the brethren. Paul talks about that in 1 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. So what I'm talking about here is that I'm trying to use the example of what Jesus did. This certainly was an allowance because of traveling and to do something which was not lawful. But God, for the sake of, in the person of Christ, for the sake of necessity, did not condemn it. Now let's take it one step further. What if the only thing that you look forward to on the Sabbath day is going out and eating? Then you have missed the whole thing. You have missed the whole thing. And you should not eat out. I mean, if you just get in the habit and you're not traveling and you go out every Sabbath to eat and the thing you look forward to is going out on the Sabbath and eating in a restaurant, then you better stop. Because you better come back and get your priorities right with the Sabbath of worshiping God and studying his word. Now let's look at some other situations concerning the Sabbath. What if you have to travel? Now they have toll roads around here, don't they? Okay. Are you buying entrance to the toll road because you go by and you throw the coin in so the arm will come up so you can drive? See? No, the need to go fellowship and travel supersedes throwing a coin in that slot or giving a $5 bill to the toll gate person and he gives you $3 back. I know what the tolls are around here. They're $2. Okay. They're also in America. They're $2 too, but most of them are just on bridges. And every other Sabbath when I go up north, I go across a toll bridge so I can go up there for Sabbath and teach the brethren. I have to pay $2 to get across the bridge. Have I broken the Sabbath, or is that an allowance that God would allow for the sake of fellowship, for the sake of keeping the Sabbath, for the sake of being with the brethren? Obviously, that's an allowance. Now, what happens if you have a flat tire when you're traveling on the Sabbath? Well, that's called a flat tire in the ditch. Okay? Can you change the tire? Yes. Now, what if you don't have a spare? Can you call a road service company to come and fix it so you can go on? Yes. Is it going to cost you some money to do it? Yes. You either have the cash or you have a road service card that you put it on, or you have a credit card that you put it on. But he's not going to come for nothing, is he? Just because it's Sabbath for you. No. Okay, that's an emergency. Now, remember what we talked about where Nehemiah set guards at the gates. What about if you have an accident on the Sabbath? What happens if it's a serious accident and somebody is injured? Are you just going to lay there until the sun goes down? Are the police going to allow the car to be in the middle of the road for hours? No. In that case, are you not thankful that there are policemen who work on the Sabbath? Who in Romans 13, God calls the servants of God who have the higher authority? Yes. And if you're injured, aren't you glad that emergency vehicles are there and emergency attendants are there so they can take you for emergency service? Maybe you're bleeding. Maybe you have a broken leg. Maybe your head is smashed in. Well, you're certainly thankful that those services are there, aren't you? And do you have to pay for the ambulance service? Yeah, your insurance company does. And if your insurance company does, then you still have your deductible you have to pay. So these are practical things that we are confronted with. Now let's take it one step further. What if you're having Sabbath services in your home and you're not going to eat out? You're going to have all the brethren there and they bring the food and you're going to have a meal after services. What if someone comes down with a heart attack or stroke? Sometime during the service or after the service or while you're eating. Are you not going to call emergency and have someone come out to assist them? Certainly you are. Are you breaking the Sabbath because you do so? No. See? So all of those things need to be considered. But the only thing that I really can get out of Mark, the second chapter here, is that if you are traveling, it is all right to eat out. Now, what if you want to pack your meal and take it? That's perfectly all right, too. That's within the realm of what you want to choose. What if it's impractical to do so? Well, then you have to make the decision yourself. So, anyway, let's read here verse 27. Let's see what he said concerning this. Let's see that he put his authority on the fact that they were eating while they were traveling there. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man. That is so that you can worship God and serve God, come to be taught on the Sabbath day and so forth. And not man for the Sabbath. In other words, man is not going to make the laws concerning the Sabbath. And that's what the Jews did, and this is what he was telling them, you see. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath day, and so therefore he gave an allowance for them to eat while they were traveling, to do something which was not lawful to do previously. Now, when the millennium comes, that won't happen. Will it? Because the whole world is going to keep the Sabbath. Every town, every city, every village, every home is going to be in a closed community. Everyone will have an assembly place they can go to, which is real handy to go to. They can walk there. All the restaurants will be closed. All the stores will be closed. Well, that's different than what we are living in this world today. Now, I understand that a lot of you are really scattered, aren't you? I know some out there, they had to drive an hour and a half just to meet out there where we were the other day. And so, with what I've presented here, I hope you can see that that one allowance is what God allows in the person of Christ, and he said he was Lord of the Sabbath, and he allowed it with his disciples, did not condemn them. And so if we eat out while we're traveling, God does not condemn us. But don't take that and stretch it into then doing your own pleasure and all of that sort of thing on the Sabbath. And let me just reiterate again that if a person in their heart before God feels that they cannot eat out in a restaurant, then by all means do not do so. And if someone feels that way, don't come after them and say, well, you know, you don't understand. Or if a person does feel that they should not eat out on the Sabbath, even if they are traveling, well, don't condemn people who do if they travel. And I know it's a very narrow little thing there. And it has to be, you know, use of judgment and use of understanding in a correct way. And if you do eat out and you're fellowshipping, boy, like I said, some of the best fellowship we've had when we had to get out of the hall and where are we going to go? Well, you're immediately going to drive 300 miles this way or 150 miles this way. And someone says, well, let's go down and have lunch and let's continue fellowshipping. And I think fellowshipping is very important for us who are scattered because we're out there all alone otherwise. Well, I thought I answered them through John Morgan and also by mentioning on a tape. So I thought those that had this question that I had answered it. And sometimes when people write things in, I don't answer it, but I don't forget it. It may take me time to get to it. I remember one thing, it took me about 3 years to get to it because so many things kept crowding up, and I finally did get to it. And if someone writes and I don't answer back right away or it takes a long time, that doesn't mean I've forgotten or I've thrown it away. That just means I haven't gotten around to it. Or if I will answer it, maybe I won't answer it as fully as I did today, but I did on some other tape some years back. So I felt the need to do so here, since this is where the questions came from, and I'm sure it affects everyone here, and I know it affected everyone out there where I was last night, too. So I think that may help the situation here quite a bit. Question is, what about unconverted families inviting you out, say, like for a Friday night or something? Well, what I would do is this. I would let them know ahead of time that, you know, Friday night, Saturday night is Sabbath. However, if they have, you know, traveled 400 miles to come and see you, then you see you're coming into a situation where they have been traveling. But I would not make a regular practice of going out with unconverted people on Friday night if the sun has not set. I mean, if the sun has set, rather. If it is not set, well, that's fine. You know, or in some cases with, you know, your family who are not converted, you know, I would just suggest to them, if you can work out to have an earlier dinner, go ahead and do that so you're done by the Sabbath. If I could, you know, phrase it that way. That way you're keeping it in the same range of traveling and eating. Whereas if they live right in town, you know, and they call up and say, hey, let's go out to dinner Friday night, you know, just set the time earlier. Or if they know you keep the Sabbath, you can work around that. But that's a good question. Thanks. Here's another example I just want to bring out to you. I don't wear a watch or jewelry because my wrist swells up when I wear a watch and my finger swells up when I wear a ring. So I just don't wear it. See? Now, when I'm home in the U.S., my clock, inner clock, is pretty much within 10 or 15 minutes of the actual time. And in my office, I have a clock up on the wall. We have many clocks through the house so I can keep track of time. But, the point was this. Some people would condemn me because I don't wear any jewelry. Okay. Nor lipstick. Same way with makeup. God says nowhere, thou shalt not wear makeup. Granted, Jezebel made herself up. But you can have someone who is, how should we say? Let's just say it this way. A young woman who is a virgin, never sinned, never committed adultery, nothing. She could put all kinds of makeup. Is she an adulteress? No, because she hasn't sinned. Is it silly? Yes. Is it vain? Yes. Is it a sin? No. It's in bad taste. What if the person then learns a lesson and sees that it's in bad taste and then moderates it? That's fine. Makeup does not make women sinful. Lack of makeup does not make women righteous. You can have a woman who's never had any makeup on, who could be as loose a woman or adulterous as you would ever want to see. See, the lack of makeup did not make her righteous. Righteousness comes from within. And I know these things have been used in the church over years, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth over it. And what they really were, they were control mechanisms that the ministry used over the people, which they should not have used in that way. So makeup is another case like that. Jewelry is another case like that. You know, what would you do if someone came along and said, you know, you shall not wear jewelry? Ah, your glasses are jewelry. You better take them off. See? Now you can't see. How are you going to drive to Sabbath services? See? So here again, that's another case of carrying something to an extreme. And also with makeup, you need to be careful because there are a lot of chemicals in makeup too, you know. Yeah, so you need to be careful with that.
And food as well.
That's right. Okay, here's the test of Ellen G. White. She prophesied that in the end time, all meat would be contaminated, but she forgot the vegetables. Okay. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 11 about covering with a woman's hair. I'm glad you brought that up. You can follow along in your King James. I'm going to go ahead and read out of the interlinear, Barry's interlinear here, so I can have the Greek in front of me. Okay. 1 Corinthians 11. Let's just start in verse 1 so we get the whole flow of things here. But I will have to say, there is an absolute, complete epidemic, of women who are going around with extremely short hair or bald heads. I remember I got on the plane one time, and here's the stewardess. Now, you know, they can't get rid of them when they're aging anymore. So here's this woman, and it made her completely ugly. She had a crew cut. And I was just aghast. And then I started noticing, as I'm going through the airport, here are all these women with the short hair. And I saw one over here today when I was doing my water therapy. Cut just like a man. Couldn't believe it. And then men with long hair, yes. Both are wrong, you see. Now, let's begin right here, verse 1. Be imitators of me, according as I am also of Christ. Now today we can go one step further and say, you have all the New Testament, which gives the words of Christ. So that's why I don't say, as some people say, follow me as I follow Christ. What I'm going to do is say, I'm trying to follow Christ, and here's what the Bible says, how you should follow him, you see. So it should come, but this is true. Now I praise you, brethren, that in all things you have remembered me, and according as I delivered to you the traditions you are keeping. But I wish you to know, or desire for you to know, or as it is there in the King James, I want you to know, that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Now this shows everybody's under authority. Now let me just stop and mention here, all women who are single and are not married are not under the authority of a husband or a man. When you marry, then you are under the authority of your husband. Not until. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, and here it is, having anything on his head, puts to shame his head, who is Christ. Now, isn't it interesting that the Orthodox Greeks have these hats, not Greeks, Jews, Orthodox Jews, beg your pardon, have these hats, these wide-brim hats, and they have the long curls coming down on the side? And they won't pray unless they have a prayer shawl on, or in some cases, cover their head with a prayer shawl. So he says it's a shame if they do so. Now notice verse 5. Here's a key verse. But every woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered puts to shame her head. That is, if she's married. Now then, let's look at the first part of this. When do women pray or prophesy? Now, they're told in another place, I do not allow a woman to teach, to speak in church, or to usurp authority over a man. So how can a woman pray or prophesy? And this has to do with public praying and prophesying. How do women in the church today pray and prophesy? How did they do it back then? Okay? You can do a study of all the women that's recorded in the Bible, and all the women that prayed and prophesied did so by singing. Miriam did, Deborah did, the mother of Samuel did. She prophesied, but it was in the form of singing. Now, do we have special music where women sing today? Yes, we do. What do they sing? They sing things which praise God, or they sing things which could come out of prophecies of the Scripture. So that is when a woman is praying or prophesying in church, when she is singing, not when she's speaking or praying. You find no account anywhere that a woman is teaching or that she is speaking, but she is for singing. So this can only mean when she is singing and praying and prophesying. Okay, but every woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered puts her head to shame. Now does this mean that you have to wear a hat? Or you have to put a scarf on? Now, we'll see that her long hair is given to her for her covering. Okay, but let's go on. For it is all the one and the same if she has been shaven. Now, this is what is called in English an oxymoron. I prefer to call it a morioxon. Okay? So it's almost incongruous what he's saying here. If it's a shame for her to have short hair, and it's a shame for her to be praying or prophesying if her head is not covered, if her long hair is given to her for her covering, what on earth is he talking about here? Okay? The only thing I can think of, because she certainly has not had her head shaven, but it is as if the same as her head is shaven. It's not saying that her head is shaven. Okay? Verse 6. For if a woman be not covered, let her be shorn. And I couldn't figure that out. But if it be shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. So here you have real play on words. The only thing I can figure out is this, is that even if a woman has long hair, if she gets up before the congregation to sing in praying or prophesying, and she has her hair stacked up, her head is not covered because her long hair is given for a covering. and should in that case be down. But if it's up here, it's the same as if she's shaven or shorn. But if it's a shame, let her be covered. Let her hair be put down. Now, if she does have short hair, or if it is shaven, then until it grows out, maybe she ought to wear something. But that's the beauty of hair. It grows. And like I mentioned one time on a tape, your hairdressers have deceived you. You said take off just a little bit and you came out with a butch. Okay. It'll grow. Now let's continue on here with this. Okay. For a man indeed ought not to have his head covered, for he is in the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Going clear back to Adam. Now, a lot of women have that turned around. They say the man was made for them. You see, not so. And I think there needs to be a whole lot more in understanding about husbands loving their wives and women submitting to their husbands as unto the Lord. You know, you really need to think about that, husbands. Do you love your wives as Christ loves the church? And you wives, do you submit to your husbands as unto the Lord? Everyone's going to say, yeah, but all these male chauvinists beat up and, you know. We're not talking about that. We're talking about love in both cases. If you attend the church of God and you beat up your wife, or if you're not submissive to your husband, could it be that you are deceiving yourself? God does not expect men to browbeat their wives and, you know, put them down. He doesn't expect wives to nag at their husbands. You see, we need a whole new perspective in what we're doing with these things. And that doesn't take away any of your person to do what God says. It actually helps you become a greater person, man or woman, if you really do what God says. But that'll be pleasing in God's sight. Okay, let's continue on here. For also, the man was not created on account of or for the woman, but the woman on account of the man, because God created the man and said, there's no help meet for him. So I will make an help suitable for him. Verse 10. Because of this, the fact of creation. Why should women have long hair? To distinguish between the sexes, because God made it that way. Okay? It's not a doctrine of the church to put women down or to keep you from having freedom. It's because God has made it that way. We're not going to argue with God, are we? Because of this, the woman ought to have authority on her head on account of the angels. Now, that gives an implication then that if you have your hair shaven or shorn, then the angels are not going to watch over you. Now, it doesn't say this concerning men. However, neither is the man apart from the woman, nor the woman apart from the man in the Lord, because they two are to be one flesh. For as the woman is of the man, so also is the man by the woman, because all men were born after that creation, correct? But all things of God. Now you judge it yourselves. Is it becoming for a woman to pray to God uncovered? Or does not nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame or dishonor to him? So men are not to have long hair. But if a woman have long hair, it is her glory, for her long hair is given to her instead of a covering. Meaning that you don't have to wear a scarf or a hat. The hair is instead of a covering. And besides, it's awfully hard to sit in church with some of these hats that women wear in a Protestant churches. You know, they stick way out. Everybody's trying to, big feathers sticking up there or flower. You know, I've seen that. We've had some women attend our churches for the first time. They come all decked out, you know, these big old hats because that's all they know. And they think that's what it means. The Amish have it that women must wear these little white bonnets that they have because a woman is to have a covering on her head, you see. But her long hair is given to her for a covering. Now, question, how long is long hair for men when it becomes too long? Answer, when it begins to look like women's hair. How short is short hair for a woman? When it does not cover her and it begins to look like a man's haircut. Now, since that is so clear, which it isn't, I gave it that way because you must make the judgment. Because Paul says, do you not judge in yourselves? In other words, it is the individual's responsibility to take care of the hair. Short for men, long for women. That way there is no confusion of the sexes. Now today, what do we have spread all over television, starting with cartoons for kids? We have transvestitism, don't we? That is, where male characters dress up like women. And didn't we have the movie, what was it, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert? Yes, Mrs. Gunfire, yes, yes.
Lucy's another one.
Okay, but you have that starting on cartoons, don't you? Even Bugs Bunny dressing up as a woman, right? See? God does not want the mixing of the sexes. He wants males to know they are men, females to know they are women. God created both for a magnificent purpose. God created you for each other. God made the man first. He made the man the head. That's just the way that it is. You see? Now, unfortunately, some women marry men. They haven't taken the time to find out if they are more aggressive or more intelligent than the husbands that they marry before they marry them. And then when they marry them, they find out, well, this guy can hardly think, and he's, you know, Joe Milktoast. Sorry, Joes, if any of you are Joes here. Okay. You see. There are some women who have a stronger personality than some men. There are some women who are smarter than some men. In those cases, if you get a mismatch, are you going to have lots of problems in your marriage? Yes. But are you still bound before God? Yes. So before you marry, be very careful. And another thing, too. That becomes a problem as the family grows up and the children leave. The women have no one to mother. So they begin mothering their husbands. And this can become very annoying. It's just automatic. God did not create you as a wife to mother your husband. Quit mothering. The children are gone. What about the man who has been mothered by his mother and expects you to be the same? You got problems. What should you do? Yeah. Stop dating him if you haven't been married yet. Or if you are married, what you both need to do is sit down and really be honest with each other in a nice way. You don't have to put him down and say, well, you know, you stupid oaf, don't you know that your mother mothered you and you're a mother's boy and all you want me to do is mother you and I'm not going to mother you? No. What you need to do is honestly say, look, I'm not your mother. Don't expect me to treat you like your mother. I'm your wife. I love you, submit to you, but you need to, you know, take care of yourself. You need to learn to make decisions. Don't come to me to make them for you. Now, if you want some counsel, I'll be very happy to give you some counsel. But I am not going to mother you. It all goes to show that before you marry, make sure, you know, don't let the passions and the chemistry take you down. Ask the question, do I want to spend the rest of my natural life with this man or with this woman? Get to know them before you tie the knot. Let's pick it up in verse 20. Zechariah 14 and verse 20. In that day there shall be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto the Lord. And the pots in the Lord's house shall be like to the bowls before the altar, which then, instead of having any pots that were not gold or silver, they're all going to be gold or silver like the bowls. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts. Now, what does that mean? That means that there is going to be so much coming out from Jerusalem, and everything there in Jerusalem is going to be holy. Whatever we are going to do is going to be holy. And that's what it means in this particular case. Okay? And all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seed therein. Now this is an indication of sacrifices. And I suppose that part of your question is, if this mentions sacrifices here and if this is in the millennium, why did I say that I don't think we will have sacrifices during the millennium? I will have to say, I don't know. We'll have to take a look at it. Now, there may be sacrifices for the feast days when everyone is there, and the sacrifice is that which then you eat. But there will be no need for a sin offering, because Christ is there, correct? Do we need a sin offering today in the way of an animal sacrifice? No, because Christ is here. See? He's already come. Well, what about when he's literally on the earth? What need would there be for a sin offering of an animal? None. Did Abraham offer burnt offerings on different occasions? Yes, he did. And those burnt offerings were those then which glorify God. Would he have peace offerings which he would offer and eat? Of course he would. So if there are any offerings during the millennium, that's what they would relate to. The peace offerings keeping of the holy days. And the reason is, and shall seed therein. In other words, these holy bowls, they're going to be boiled, you see. And those are sacrifices which the people eat. The sacrifices which went to God were a burnt offering which was wholly burnt, the whole thing entirely, and the sin offering was burnt upon the altar, wholly burnt, the sin offering, the blood was splashed at the altar, and the sin offering was taken outside the camp and burned at the Mifkad altar, where they burned all the sin offerings, wholly burnt. So where it says seed therein, that is those which the people would eat. So we would have to assume, yes, there will be sacrifices for the holy days, which the people participate and eat in, and they are boiled or seed. Good stew. I love good lamb stew. Okay? What are you talking about? All right. And in that day there shall be no more Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. Canaanite would have to refer to the practices of the Canaanites. Obviously, physically, there will be no Canaanites there. And spiritually, there will be no Canaanites there. Now, were there Canaanites who came into the priesthood during the days of Israel and some of their apostasies? Well, I would have to assume that there were. Remember during the days of Elijah with Jezebel and the prophets of Baal? Those were all Canaanites. See, so could some of them have come in and have been you know, priest which were not authorized? Could very well be. We also know that of the Jews, there are a lot of Esauites involved with them. And during the days of Herod, he took all the Edomites, or Esauites, who lived in southern Judah, and he forced them to all be circumcised. And they became Jews. You also have today that a lot of the those who came from the kingdom of the Khazars became known as Ashkenazi Jews, which were those Jews in Poland and Russia. Those are not Jews by bloodline, they are only Jews by religion, though they practice circumcision and so forth. So this would have to have some indication for that. But also it is more that there's going to be the pure worship of God at the house of God.